And this is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We'll be taking questions this morning on financial planning, money management, something that we do every month on the show. Our number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We are also going to be spending some time talking with you about supporting the radio station. I'm not going to take a lot of time to do that now, but I do just want to mention our website. That would be a way for you to continue to listen and make your contribution at the same time. You can go to willpledge.org and make your pledge that way. Of course, you can always call in with a pledge if you like. That's 244-9455. Our guests this morning are Kevin Waspy and John Masadich. Kevin is a lecturer in the College of Business here at the U of I. He's certainly been here on the program a number of times with us, and also John Masadich. He has been here before as well. He is the president and owner of Kensington Financial. It is a professional money management firm with clients all over the world. He's also adjunct professor of finance at the U of I and the College of Business. And occasionally he's here in Champaign-Urbana and teaches. So we're really pleased to have the two of them here this morning. Your usual guest, Dave Sino, he's probably off fishing somewhere, knowing him. he couldn't be with us, but we're very glad to have the two of them here to answer questions. And as I said before, we can sit here and chat, but the way that we can be most useful to people who are listening is if you call us and give us your own specific questions about your particular situation, and the two of them will do their best to share their experience and give you their advice. Champaign-Urbana callers, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, thanks both to you for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you, David. Always good to be with you.
Yeah. One thing I want to make sure that we talk about is Money Smart Week. This is the second year now I think this has happened. A primary sponsor is the Federal Reserve Bank in Chicago. But in communities all over the country, there are local organizations that are sponsoring a series of, you know, informational meetings, programs, seminars. The idea is that it's an opportunity for people to think about whatever their financial goals are. And whether that's, you know, buying a house or planning for your retirement or making sure you have money to send your kids to college or whatever it is, a lot of different opportunities for people to ask questions and become educated on those sorts of things.
Absolutely. And the Federal Reserve Bank in Chicago, 7th District of the Fed, actually began this series of programs in Chicago 11 years ago. This is the second year that they've had a version of it in Champaign County. Over the past 11 years, they've spread to all of the states in the 7th District of the Fed. And they've really done a nice job trying to bring people together that have a common goal of financial literacy. So we like to refer to these types of programs as an educational opportunity for ages K through L. So kindergartners through you name the upper age, I'm happy to see 100-year-old people attending. It's that open of a program.
All right. And there are, in addition to being the main sponsor here, the bank in Chicago, I know that there are a lot of local sponsors, the university, there are a lot of banks and financial institutions. I believe the city of Champaign is on here, and the United Way, and the village of Rantoul, and a lot of other people. And if you're interested in finding out the programs that are going to be a part of this, and this is the 18th through the 25th, and you have internet access, probably the easiest way to do it is to go to their website, which is www.moneysmartweek, and that's, you know, all is one word, no spaces, moneysmartweek.org. And the kickoff event here is a breakfast and media event that'll be happening on Monday, Champaign Public Library, morning.
Again, it's spread throughout Champaign County. It's in Springfield. It's in Bloomington, across the state of Illinois, throughout Iowa, Wisconsin, certainly around the areas, collar counties of Chicago. But a good way to bring financial literacy to everyone, regardless of age, regardless of status, regardless of circumstances. So everything from budget counseling to debt counseling to how to be an informed consumer of financial products, it's that type of thing. And as you mentioned, with what's happened in our economy, I think there's probably no one I can imagine that would argue that greater financial literacy is probably something that we need in hopes of not having to repeat this.
Yeah, well, we're trying to do our bit this morning. And again, if we can help you out, give us a call. We have a caller ready to go, someone who is listening in Urbana, and that's line number one.
Hello?
Yes. Go ahead.
My question is, I want to know your opinion of Charles Schwab Company.
Well, do you want to give your opinion on a
if they're trustworthy or if what you think of them, are they good or are they bad or are they poor or
okay,
excellent
well,
or what?
John?
Yeah, this John here. I think I can answer that. In my business in San Diego, managing money for several clients, I primarily deal with Charles Schwab. And I don't get any – I just want to make it clear. I don't get any kickbacks or, you know, commissions from Schwab. I'm a fee-only financial planner. I've dealt with them about 20 years. I've got about $70 million under management for my clients. And over most of that $70 million is at Charles Schwab. And my experience with them has been excellent. They're kind of a financial supermarket in that you can buy virtually any mutual fund out there, practically anyone. You can buy stocks, bonds, you know, gold, you name it. And they offer a number of good services, you know, just money market funds, IRA accounts, Roth IRAs, you name it. I personally have quite a bit of my own money at Charles Schwab. They are not the cheapest out there in terms of commissions. If you're looking for the lowest cost discount broker, Charles Schwab is not the one. You could probably do better in terms of minimizing commissions at E-Trade or TD Ameritrade, Scottrade, a number of others. I say Schwab is kind of in the middle range of commissions. They're not the most expensive and they're not the cheapest. So I have nothing but good things to say about them.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask is in the first 2 weeks of February, I received 3 pounds of paper from them. Something like 14 prospectuses and duplicates of everything. And so I wrote Mr. Schwab a letter, only I found out he never got the letter. I think it went into the circular file.
Well, my suggestion is to call Schwab, and there is a way online to go paperless. You can either call it in, and they will do it on the phone for you. Call their 800 number. It's 800-435-4000. 800-435-4000.
Okay.
They should be able to do it online for you. I mean, right there on the telephone, or you could go online and, you know, and.
No, yep. I don't have a computer. What
okay.
was that number again? 800.
800-435-4000. And I am totally paperless myself and all of my clients. It's easy to do. The only thing you cannot turn off getting those prospectuses, because it's federal law that if you own a certain security, even if it's just their, you know, their plain old vanilla money market fund.
They were all duplicates. It was 14 the same.
Okay, something's gone wrong in the computer system then. So it's just a simple matter of calling them, and they'll be able to help you, I'm sure.
Okay, thank you.
All
sure.
right, very good. Continuing here, we'll talk next with someone in Champaign County. This is line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
This is really a simple, well, not a simple investment question, but I'd like a primer on annuities. There's been a lot of, I guess, flight to annuities, but they seem to be gotten complicated. Equity baskets, pledges, a bonus that pays you to helps pay down the penalty. I guess I don't know exactly understand why they would have this in the mix, except, I guess, to get business to their company. And I think it was Hartford quit their bonus just like very abruptly, and it kind of bothered people. And with this announcement TARP money was going to some of the insurance companies, it makes people wonder what's going on and whether annuities have anything. I don't know. There's a lot of different varieties. I don't know if you want to react to any of that, but could you just give a sort of a primer on how annuities work? I mean,
sure.
What are the drawbacks? And I'll hang up.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks for the call.
Yeah, caller, it's a very good question. It's a very timely question. Annuities really come in two types, really. There's a fixed annuity, which is the one I really recommend. You're guaranteed a fixed rate of interest. And there's a variable annuity. The variable annuity is really tied to some sort of stock mutual fund clone. Okay, there's obviously more risk with that, whereas the fixed annuity is really tied to a bond portfolio. The main thing you have to do is assess the financial strength or the solvency of the insurance company behind the annuity, because it's the insurance company that's making these guarantees. Now, you brought up Hartford. It's really a timely issue. Hartford has been in the news recently. Two, 3 years ago, nobody worried about Hartford's financial solvency. AAA rated, no problem. Their annuities paid like clockwork. And now they're being downgraded by the rating agencies. They made a lot of promises, especially on their variable annuities tied to the stock market. And there is definitely some risk that they may not be able to make good on this promise in paying out a certain amount on the variable annuities. But on the fixed annuities, I think the situation is far better. To date, I don't think there's been a default in any major fixed annuity by any major insurance company. So I would say, first of all, look at the financial rating of the annuity. Standard & Poor's has a rating system, rating, you know, going from AAA, AA, single A, and there's an insurance agency called AM Best. You can Google this, AM Best, and you can get a rating on the insurance company. That's the first thing to look at. There is a very good argument for fixed annuities, and our colleague here at the University of Illinois in the finance department, Jeff Brown, has done some research on this, and there have been a plethora of academic studies recently showing that fixed annuities really do make a lot of sense. I would treat fixed annuities as a kind of a the quasi-bond part of your stock and bond portfolio. And I am personally looking at annuities myself. I'm age 62. And within a year or two, my wife and I plan to make a charitable gift annuity to the University of Illinois Foundation. And for us, they're quoting us a rate of about 5.6%. To us, it makes a lot of sense. If the insurance company standing behind the U of I annuity, you know, is AA or AAA rated, that's probably what we're going to do, because you really can't get 5.6 to 6% today in other than junk bonds. 10-year treasuries, to put this in perspective, are about 2.7% and have been falling recently. So if you can get anything considerably higher than 2.7, a guaranteed payment for the rest of your life, I think that's a pretty good deal.
All right. Well, I hope that helps. Certainly the caller, if he'd like to follow up, can call back. And anyone who is listening, if you have questions this morning about financial planning, money management, we have been doing this program once a month for a long time now to give you the chance to ask those questions. And our guests this morning are John Masetich, Kevin Wasby. John is the president and owner of Kensington Financial. He's also adjunct professor of finance here within the College of Business. Kevin is a lecturer in the College of Business, and both of them have been here before on this program to do this very thing. So if you have questions that are very specific to you, your own situation, you can call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. We hope that people will call in. Maybe if you haven't, you can call in with a pledge, but that's a different thing. It's a different number. No, pledging is not required here to call into the program. You know, we're not going to charge you for these guys' advice. That's free. All you have to do is call 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Bloomington, Illinois, and line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a couple questions. Mm-hmm. One of them is about mutual funds, because you mentioned commissions for Charles Schwab. But how about the fees they charge, or whoever charges for buying mutual funds? Or I can't even remember what they're called, but you know, when you buy mutual funds, you have a
front-end load or a surrender charge when you liquidate them?
So you can buy the no-load funds.
Uh-huh.
For example, if you buy Vanguard's total market, it's 15%, and Charles Schwab is 36%. And then I try to do a calculation. So, in, you know, over so many years, you end up spending a lot more money if you get it from Charles Schwab. And it doesn't matter whether it's Charles Schwab or anybody else. Oh, boy, I hate when I forget things. Okay, let's go to the second question. Maybe it'll come back to me. The second question is, if I wanted to just do what Mr. Sinha used to call about the couch potato, put money in different mutual funds, I would do a small cap, large cap, total, international. Could you give me a spread of what you would recommend? And then just sit on it, because I've had it with the stock market. So I want to do something where it's just, you know, I put, you know, a few dollars every month and hopefully watch it build. Am I making sense?
I'm struggling here because, not to get too deep into the subject, but, you know, for people that have time to invest, if you're not nearing the need for that money, things that have variable values over time really are the most, I would say, prudent things to invest in. Now, variable values is a polite way of saying it can go up in value and it can go down. So regardless of the asset class, stocks, bonds, real estate, collectibles, commodities, every one of those are variable value assets, potential for gain, potential for loss, so on and so forth. I think the biggest hurdle with people today, again, given what's happened over the past couple of years with the stock market, with the bond market, with every market that we can imagine, we've got to remind ourselves that it's not a 1 or a 2 year process if the need for the money is not 1 or 2 years from now. It's the time to remind yourself that an appropriate setting of an asset allocation strategy for the purpose of the funding, for the goal you're trying to achieve is, I don't want to call it a set and forget, but I do want to call it a set, monitor, and remind yourself process. John?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And also, I'd like to address your first question about the commissions. You can buy a so-called no-load mutual fund, meaning there's no commission up front, directly with the mutual fund. You don't have to go through an intermediary or a financial supermarket like Charles Schwab. So if you're interested in any of those Vanguard funds, and I would highly recommend, you know, most of the funds. I also use Vanguard primarily, in fact, even though I use Charles Schwab as an intermediary. But you can go directly with Vanguard and pay zero commission up front. And I'm not sure what you meant by the 15% and the 36%. I think it's probably the expense ratios you were talking about.
Exactly. I just remembered the word. Yes, expense ratio.
Yeah. Well, you can't do any better than Vanguard in terms of expense ratios. John Bogle founded the Vanguard Mutual Fund Group back in the 1970s, and his whole mandate at that time, and this is still true, is to offer the lowest cost mutual funds out there. And that's what they've been doing for 30-some years. So that expense ratio for most Vanguard mutual funds is somewhere between 1/10 and 0.2%. Believe me, it doesn't get any better than that. So I would say just go directly to Vanguard. And there are other good funds too, but I would say primarily Vanguard. And John Bogle has made this point over and over again. There was a great op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal just a couple of weeks ago, and he reiterated how expenses really do make a difference in the long run. That if you're paying 1.5%, which, by the way, is the average annual expense ratio for a stock mutual fund today in the United States, 1.5%, as opposed to 1/10 or 0.2% at Vanguard. So, you know, you could literally pay about 1/7 or 1/8 as much by using a Vanguard no-load fund, and that's the way to minimize your expense ratio.
And that would take you, going forward, it cost you, obviously cost you a lot less money.
Yes.
Leaving it for 20 years.
That's absolutely.
If you wouldn't mind, if I go back to my second question very quickly, and I won't keep you long because I need to get going too. What I was curious is that, just very quick general, if I were going to do what I call the couch potato thing, I want to be in something in international, something in large cap, small cap. I just want some categories, if you can, because I want to make sure when I start doing this that I cover all the categories. I don't skip anything. And basically, my husband and I are both around 50 years of age. We have 15 to 20 years, let's say 15 years to add to, and then, you know, I'm sure we'll leave it there until, as long as we need it. You know, we don't need it.
Right. Well, I'll let David list those categories here in a minute. But remember that the couch potato is an all-stock portfolio.
Okay.
You know, so you're talking, if you're going to put all of, if you're suggesting that you're going to put most or all of your money in that, that's a very risky position. Extremely, because that's 100% stocks. I would suggest that maybe you ought to have some bonds in there and some CDs and a money market fund. And so you have to think about your overall asset allocation. You know, think of it stocks versus fixed income. Do you want to be 80-20, 70-30, 50-50? That's the most important criterion going forward. All the academic studies show that it's the asset allocation decision that is by far the most important. So I'm suggesting to you that I don't think you want to have 100% in stocks and nothing in fixed income.
Right. No, I understand that. No, actually, that's what I meant, too. I meant everything. So just a very quick general suggestion. I'd really appreciate it. Do you want bonds in there, CDs in there?
Sure. I tell you what you ought to do. Go to Vanguard.com.
Okay.
By the way, I'm not on the payroll for Vanguard, and I keep bringing them up. But, you know,
I'm
really not. I'm their West Coast representative, you might say, in an unofficial capacity. But go to Vanguard.com, and at the top, there's an icon called Planning and Education. And then you're going to have to do several clicks. If you get lost, just call them, and they will direct you to a table. And the table is called Vanguard Model Portfolio Allocations. Again, Vanguard Model Portfolio Allocations. And they will show you what all these asset allocations have done since 1926 on an annual basis, whether it's, you know, 90-10, 80-20, 50-50. And there's a neat table, and just using that table, you can really determine what kind of risk tolerance you're willing to take. So, for example, let me just put a very specific number on this. Let's say you decide after looking at this table that you're comfortable with a 50-50 split between stocks and fixed income. Since 1960, that 50-50 portfolio had a worst-case scenario of minus, well, you know what? It happened last year was the worst-case scenario. Little update here. Minus 15.9 last year, worst case. Prior to last year, the worst case was, I don't remember the year, but it was a minus 14% return for a worst-case calendar year. But last year, we broke the record. That 50-50 portfolio had a minus 15.9 loss. So if you'd be comfortable with 50-50, you know, with a, say, a 16% loss, then 50-50 is your preferred asset allocation. If that makes kind of jangles your insides, a 16% loss, then ratchet down in risk to maybe, you know, 30-70 or 20-80. But anyway, go look at that table. I think it's really a good way to initially think about what risk you want to take.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good. And I do want to mention that for anybody, if you have access to the internet and you'd like to see the what we have, one kind of asset allocation that we've been talking about, the one that Dave now does every month, and we don't have an update, so the most recent figures here are for the last time around. But his couch potato portfolio is, as John said, it's all stocks. And you can see how he's got it laid out. So that's one way of thinking about it. If you want to be real aggressive, maybe you want to do that, but of course, more risk, more stocks, more risk. That's something you got to think about. But if you go to our website, and this is actually still on the old version of the website, which is WILL.UIUC.EDU, go to AM, click on that, click on Focus 580, click on links, and you will find that there. So you can see what that allocation is. We have some other calls we're going to get to in just a second. First, though, what I want to do is make sure that people understand that one of the things that we're here to do this morning and this week is to raise money for WILL. Now, Kevin Waspy, he's a great guy. What can I say? I never would have thought he would be such a generous guy, though. He comes in this morning and he hands me a packet of money, more than $360, ladies and gentlemen, in this packet of money. The problem is it's been shredded. And, you know, we could have a party and we could get together and see if we could put these little pieces back together. I think maybe we'd use our time much better if we just said to folks, now, send us some money. Don't shred it. Don't put it in an envelope. Go on our website. Give us a call. Make a contribution because we need the money and we'd like to have it in one piece. Martha Deal is here. She's one of the producers. Can you hear that money, ladies and gentlemen?
I can hear that money.
That's the sound of money.
And, you know, that $365 is a good figure. If you can give a dollar a day, if that's what WILL is worth to you, we would certainly take that. You may feel that a $60 or $120 is more in your range at this point in time, and that would be just fine. If you happen to be in the more fortunate position of $1,000, we would not refuse that either. And think about what a show like this is worth to you. How much do you value that? You can go all over the TV spectrum, all over the radio spectrum, and you can listen to people giving you financial advice, and you can listen to other experts asking them questions, but how many times can you actually ask the experts personal questions? And that's one thing we value bringing to you. And if you value that service, please pick up the phone, call 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org. Mm-hmm. It is a risk-free thing, and you do get a dividend in response when you make that investment in WILL.
I think there's a future for you in marketing.
Uh-huh.
We've been doing this program here for a long time, and some of the things we do on Focus are like this. The idea is when we have our home maintenance guys, we have an auto mechanic, we have physicians of various kind, we have people here who have expertise in certain areas. And so we say, well, we know that you're always going to have these kind of questions. Here's someone. They're going to take their best shot answering your question. Call us. And we hope that over time that people have benefited from being able to call in and talk with guys like Kevin and John and Hank Spies and Rick Karch and Dr. Jeff Swearingen and all of these people we have on the show. A resource for you. And
David, it just proves that public radio is a great idea.
Well, if you think so, you folks who are listening, here's what you do. You give us a call and you make a pledge. 244-9455 is the number to call, or maybe even easier for you would be to go online and go to willpledge.org. If you can do, say, a dollar a month, $10 a month, that's $120. That would be great. You want to do $1 a week, $52. That would be great. You know, whatever you can do. The important thing is that you do support the station. 244-9455. See, I got too many numbers in my head. Or willpledge.org. Okay, now, this is our monthly show on money management, personal finance. Our guests are Kevin Wasby. He's a lecturer in the College of Business here at the U of I. John Masetich. He is the president owner of Kensington Financial. He is also adjunct professor of finance at the U of I. And questions are welcome. And we have some folks who are ready to go, standing by. We'll get right back to it. Muhammad is the next person in line, and line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question about VBAS, the Voluntary Employee Benefit Association. Is that something we could talk about briefly?
Is that something we could talk about?
Sure.
Okay, so I am a member, like I say, of a public service employee and service group, and we're looking to begin a VBA. We're kind of looking to find references, somebody to advise us, so it's not so much a salesman coming in, but a neutral party to give us, you know, the best recommendation, not only for our young guys, but also something that might help an older person like me who's going to retire, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Sure. I don't have any personal experience with VBAs. In a past life, I used to set up corporate retirement plans and administer them, act as trustee and custodian, investing money for them, so on and so forth. And I'm knowledgeable enough in that area to say that when it gets to things I'm not comfortable with, I'm not going to recommend things that I'm not fully knowledgeable of. But here's a suggestion I would make. In this area, I mean, the University of Illinois, we just heard a wonderful explanation of why Focus 580, why WILL Radio is such a good thing to pledge and support. I mean, think about the resources we have right here, and one of those is the university itself. So let me mention that through the College of ACES, the Agriculture and Consumer Economics College, there is a Center for Economic and Financial Education. These are academics that are very interested in financial literacy. They try to research different aspects of economics as it relates to consumer economics, as it relates to tax policy, as it relates to so many different things. And what I would suggest is give them a call. Through this Center for Economic and Financial Education, also through the university's extension program, the kind of advice that's available in what I would say is a non-biased, not a sales type of approach is unbelievable. Now, what I can't tell you is this. I can't tell you who to ask for. because quite frankly, that is a real specialty. That's a niche area, and it's a relatively new niche area. But Professor Angela Lyons, who runs the Center for Economics, Economic and Financial Education here on the campus, has a good staff. They're very helpful people. Again, in the University of Illinois Extension system, Steve Ayers is very interested, very involved in all of the different types of help to the consumers of financial products. So that's again, best advice I can give you is to tell you flat out, I'm not an expert in VEBAs, but I'll bet you that you can find some people at Extension, at the Center for Economic and Financial Education, who can literally get you to people that will help you in an unbiased way.
Fantastic. That'll help pay the insurance down the road for the medical rising costs. So thank you very much.
Right. You're very welcome.
Thank you. And again, we'll take our next caller, and this will be someone in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hi there. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very easy question, I hope. I've been using ShareBuilder online. I'm thinking about moving over to Sogo, S-O-G-O, and I'm wondering if you're familiar with either or both of these companies, and if you might give me any guidance on which way to go. That's it. Thanks.
Okay.
What was the first one?
ShareBuilder?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, a share builder, I think, is a generic name for a dividend reinvestment program. If you buy a stock, you can tell the company, don't send me the cash dividend, reinvest it in terms of buying additional shares.
Well, or you can just bypass that and use them as a broker.
Okay. Dividend reinvestment is a good thing, you know, normally. If your stock is good, fundamentally sound, is generally a good thing to reinvest the dividends. It's a real advantage, too, because then you get the compounding effect if you can reinvest the dividend. Obviously, it depends on what stock you're talking about. Now, Kevin, do you have any thoughts on Sogo?
I don't know. I don't have any personal experience with either. I don't even recognize Sogo, so I have to, again, confess in my ignorance. But let me ask you, what are your objectives? What are you trying to do?
Basically, long-term though I am limiting my investments to, I hate to use the word green, but I want to say that in contrast to just saying one piece of environmental, the energy and so on. It's all over the place in the green areas.
Are you buying stocks in companies? Is that?
I have been. I'm thinking about beginning again. I've been sitting for about 6 months not doing anything.
Well, see, that's where I'm confused. I'm kind of lacking the link. How are we buying green? I mean, are you buying stocks in companies that?
Yes.
Okay, so you want an avenue to buy stocks in companies that you have decided are doing things you're good with.
That's right.
Okay. Well, as John pointed out, most companies that do pay a cash dividend. Now, this will exclude a lot of smaller, just getting started type of companies, but most companies that do pay a cash dividend would much rather send you a statement that shows a credit to your account in shares purchased rather than send you a check.
Right.
You can establish that relationship with those companies directly. You don't have to go through any intermediary. And all of those programs that I'm aware of allow you literally to buy and sell stock in addition to the dividend amounts directly with the company's dividend reinvestment program. So, I mean, I don't know what Sogo does other than act as maybe a gateway to those companies and their actual reinvestment programs and, quote, brokerage type of capacities for their own stock or not, so I can't help you with anything. But I mean, if that's what you're interested in, I mean, I'm kind of a believer in you just go to the root, you know, just get it done. I mean, go right to the source.
I didn't know that was a possibility.
Yeah, I'll suggest one more thing. I researched this whole green area myself about a year ago, a little over a year ago, just before the crisis started. So I didn't actually follow through with my own money. But I did identify one mutual fund you might check out. It's called New Alternatives.
And it's a mutual fund.
It is an open-ended mutual fund. I don't know the symbol, but if you do a Google search, I'm sure it'll come up. New Alternatives or New Alternative.
Okay.
And I think they had several type of companies. They had some stocks in this fund that were involved in alternative energy sources, other companies whose mission was to reduce pollution. Other companies had to do with water conservation, hydroelectric power, biomass, solar power, hydrogen. I'm looking at we just brought it up on the internet here, geothermal. I looked at about 10 of these funds because my client sort of gave me a mandate. He says, I want a green fund of some sort. Mm-hmm. And this is the one that I favored out of about 10 funds. So take a look at it. I think, there's something to be said in going in that direction. I know that, the president's stimulus program is putting quite a bit of money in this whole area. I don't remember the exact number. I think it's $40, $50 billion or something. And so these companies could be the beneficiaries of that part of the stimulus bill. New Alternatives Fund.
Okay. I'm gonna look it right up.
And there are several out there. That's not the only one.
Right.
But bear in mind that you're really buying a sector fund now. By definition, you're not buying a well-diversified fund. It may be well-diversified within that very narrow sector, but it's not diversified, like an index fund, an S&P 500 index fund. So consider this a sector fund, and, you might want to limit your investment in such a thing to just a very small percent of your investment portfolio. Despite the social good here, again, it's a very risky by definition because it's a sector fund.
All
right.
Thank you
very
much.
Very good. I think that it's an interesting area, this area that I guess has generally been referred to as, socially conscious investing. I mean, that's one thing, that where people have strong values and they want their investment choices to reflect those values. Mm-hmm. And that they might say that there are certain things that they don't want their money going into. And I think that for a long time there has been a certain sector of the investment business that has been trying to position itself that way. It's a small part, but it's there. And there are socially conscious mutual funds, as you say, where if, for example, if you don't want your money going into, who knows, you don't want your money going to a tobacco company, you don't want your money going to an oil company, you don't want your money going to a company that makes bombs, mm-hmm. or whatever, you can actually do that. And I think that the returns are there, you can live with the returns. They may not be what you would get if you put your money into the S&P 500. But given the fact that you have those concerns, it is actually possible for people in their investment choices to be able to sleep at night when they think about where their money is going. So that's something
right.
that people can look into.
That's a good point, and I'll show my age again. In a past life, we had clients that were socially aware many years ago. It was an age where, for example, in South Africa, apartheid, the Sullivan principles right. were an investor's guide to the kinds of companies that should or should not be invested in from an aspect of whether or not that was a system, an ideology that you were willing to support financially. And that was probably the first institutional area that I can remember about socially conscious investing. As time went on, the Puritan funds brought out a social awareness set of funds. All of those things have grown with people's interest in ecology, with people's interests in, everything that we do and interacting with the earth, our fellow man, so on and so forth. But I think John brings up a very good point just a minute ago. Having a social focus toward your investments from a financial point of view does mean that you've gone further out on a risk continuum. You are segregating. You are self-selecting. You are, by definition, narrowing your focus down rather than diversifying across broader areas. There's nothing wrong with that. But again, it kind of gets to the old adage, Do I want to sleep well or do I want to eat well? And don't kid yourself in thinking that you're going to sleep well by putting all of your money in something that's a narrow focus. Because if you wake up and decide that, you know, you don't like the volatility of that narrow focus, well, there goes the sleeping well about feeling socially invested.
Okay. Well, and so keep that in mind. Someone again called in, though. They wanted to hear again what the name of the fund that we were talking about was.
New Alternatives Fund.
New Alternatives Fund. All right.
And caution is the word.
Okay. But you can go, if you have web access, you can go look them up. You can see what they're all about. We have some other callers here. We'll next talk with somebody in Charleston and line four. Hello.
Yes. Thank you very much. This has to do with the an investment in a new 529 plan, and this is one that will not be used for about, let's say, at least 15 years from now. And first, I'm considering an S&P 500 or a Wilshire 5000 fund to just periodically invest in. And then I was thinking, what would have happened if you'd have done that about 15 years ago to get into use now? And then I thought about the possibility of a targeted retirement fund, which would be whatever 15 years from now is 2024 or whatever, because as I understand it, they take asset allocation into account and change that as you're getting closer to retirement, so you'd be more or fewer stocks and more bonds about the time that begins to go into effect. Is that a reasonable line of thought and selection of an alternative?
I think all of those possible paths are very reasonable. I think they all hold their own positives and negatives. So just to begin with, again, as my colleague has already pointed out, 100% stocks is a risky position, just like 100% in anything is kind of a risky position. So even with a 15-year horizon, I wouldn't discount the prudence of thinking about a mix of stocks and bonds and think globally. So think outside the United States. You mentioned things like the S&P 500, a U.S. large cap, the 500 largest United States-based companies versus a Wilshire 5000. Well, that's kind of like the world of stocks. So I would favor something, at least in a stock component, that would be more broadly diversified than the S&P 500, perhaps the Wilshire. But then fixed income I don't think should be ignored. Because, again, 15 years sounds like a long time, but even over a 15-year period, there's quite a lot of volatility that could be tempered with as much as 20, 30, 40% even in a good, high-quality fixed income mixture. So that's kind of the genesis then behind what you've just described as these target funds, these life cycle funds, the funds that are supposed to be doing those allocations and then ratcheting them more and more towards safer things as you get closer to the target date. And quite frankly, some of the recent things that I've read about the target fund's performance in the current environment, and if you wanted to talk about a stress test, what a great time to test philosophies and test investment strategies, execution. Here's what the company was hoping to do. Here's what they actually ended up generating for results. Quite frankly, the past 2 years have not been very kind to target funds because they haven't been very good in thinking that, you know, okay, fine, we're mixing asset classes, and maybe if I'm only 3 or 5 years from retirement, I'm in a majority of fixed income. But quite frankly, the selection of what type of fixed income they were in got slaughtered. So, you know, maybe that's a learning curve that they're going through, and maybe 15 years from today, the experience in that learning curve will help them produce better results, more along the lines of people's expectations. John?
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on that. Kevin, you made a really good point about some of these target funds literally blowing up. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal just a few days ago. The Oppenheimer Group had these target funds that were in various state-run 529 plans, and they literally blew up. There was one Oppenheimer fund that billed itself as a balanced fund, which generally means, you know, you're 50-60% stocks and the rest of it is in fixed income. And this fund lost, I don't know, 40-50% last year. Their loss should have been somewhere in the 15-20% range. Instead, they lost 40-50%. And the article went on to show that Oppenheimer invested in a bunch of derivatives, that were real estate related, CDOs and subprime mortgage type stuff, and all of it, of course, blew up. And also, the other point, I want to just mimic what Kevin said. Consider a more balanced portfolio. 15 years is a long period of time, and I think you could justify being in all stocks, over a 15-year period, at least maybe for the first half of that period. But if you wanted to maybe just ratchet down the risk and, sell down to the sleeping point, so to speak, consider, just some a couple of good balance funds. And again, I'll harken back to Vanguard. They've got a couple of really good ones. The Vanguard Balance Index Fund has been around forever. They stick to their knitting. It's 60% stocks, and the stocks mimic pretty much the S&P 500 fund. And they put 40% in bonds, and I think they mimic the Vanguard Total Bond Index Fund. And then there's the Vanguard Wellington Fund, which has a slightly better record. And I probably like Wellington a little bit better than Vanguard Balance because Wellington will mix in some international stocks. So for the 60% in stocks, Wellington will put probably about 45% in the American market, and they'll put about 15% in the international market, with the balance being in fixed income. So, again, those are two funds to consider as an alternative to a target fund, Vanguard Balance Index and Vanguard Wellington Fund. Wellington Fund, in fact, is the oldest balance fund in the United States. I think it was established in the 1920s. I am personally invested, and I've got a lot of client money in it, too.
Well, thank you very much. It's been very helpful.
All right, very good. We'll try to get one more caller here in, and this is Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Just a quick question. Can you see any downside to having about 25% of your assets in CDs long-term, till I think 2012, at between 4% and 5%?
I've always been a believer in managing a portfolio of CDs. David Inge, of course, has heard me talk about this ladder of maturities. And I think in that context, and to fulfill a component of the fixed income part of your total portfolio, it's just a real nice strategy. It just takes you out of the interest rate guessing game. And real briefly, that ladder of maturities is basically divvy the money up into four, maybe six different equal buckets amounts, and then go out and buy a 6-month, a 12-month, an 18-month, a 24-month, a 30-month, and a 36-month CD. And then every 6 months, you roll it over into a new 36-month CD. So, in that example, a sixth of your money's coming due every 6 months. Once you've gone through a cycle of rolling over all of those CDs into new 36-month CDs, you're basically earning a 3-year yield on a portfolio of money that's constantly coming due. Interest rates go up. I call it the bonus period. Interest rates are steady. Every renewal gets rolled at a 3-year yield. Interest rates go down. They have to go down considerably before what's rolling off is reinvested at a lower rate. I mean, I like keeping stuff simple. I'm a simple person.
I would agree with that. And I want to congratulate the caller for locking up 4 to 5%. That is terrific. I was just on the Charles website over the last couple of days looking for to put some of my client money in CDs, and I'm looking at 0.8%, 0.9%, 1% going out 12 to 18 months. They're pathetically low. The bad news is that if you got new money right now to put in CDs, you're looking at 2% at the most.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I also was wondering about the allocation of 25%. Does that sound right?
Do you have the rest of it in stocks?
No. I have quite a bit of it in income-producing real estate, and then some in stocks and some in bonds.
Well, my suggestion is to sit down, and maybe you've done this already, with an Excel spreadsheet or just on a yellow pad and calculate what is your asset allocation. I would divide it up into CDs, bonds, stocks.
I just did while I was listening to you mm-hmm. guys. But I have a large percent, 63%, in income-producing real estate. But I've been in it a long time, and they're paid off, and that's my business.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, quite frankly, I don't think that's overly conservative with 25% of your money in a CD ladder. Income-producing property that's paid off. I mean, you obviously have a fixed income element there, but a very highly volatile cash flow potential. For instance, one of those properties needs substantial renovation. You'll have to have cash to do it, right?
Right.
So,
and I have a money market to cover that kind of thing.
Okay, that's beautiful. It sounds like, you know, it sounds like you enjoy sleeping well at night, and so do I.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you. I need to jump in here just because we're coming to the end of the first hour. However, our guests, Kevin Waspy, John Masetich, have been good enough to say they'd spend the whole morning with us here. So they'll be around for the next hour, and I hope we'll take more questions. We'll certainly open up the phone lines and make that possible for you.